is Decoding the Crime Verse.
911, what's your emergency?
Tick, tick, tick.
Boom!
Welcome to another episode of Decoding the Crime Verse right here on Active FM. I am Nolte Lee.
And I am Danny.
And this week we are doing one of the most interesting people we've ever done.
I'm glad you liked my topic this time.
I really
time.
Did. In
always
the beginning,
complains about
I
my topic. So we're actually doing something different today. I don't think we've done a bombing before. I mean, we've done kidnappings, we've done murder,
yeah.
We've done serial
yeah.
killers. But today, we have a bombing.
Yes. And the
hence the title.
The man that the world eventually knew as Theodore Kaczynski came to our attention in 1978 with the explosion of his first primitive homemade bomb at Chicago University. Over the next 17 years, this man for 17 years, he mailed and hand-delivered...
A whole 17 years.
Right. A whole series of increasingly sophisticated bombs that killed 3 Americans and injured nearly 24 more. Along the way, he showed fear and panic, even threatening to blow up airliners in flight.
If I was alive during this time and someone was going to tell me they were going to bomb my plane while it was in the sky... You would catch me. I don't know what I would do. I wouldn't leave my house.
Me too. I'd be like, no, it's fine. But you're the pilot. No, not today. I'm going to stay at home.
But the thing was, it was 17 years. Imagine.
I know.
Guys, I would have left America.
17 years of terror. You shaking the whole of the 17. You don't know when this bomb is coming. Where it's coming. To
next
who
thing
it's
you get a
to.
Package and kaboom. In your house. And then you're dead.
I wouldn't pick up packages
anymore.
I would
have left.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, so let's get right into it. I'm going to read a story, and this is from biography.com, because, you know, referencing is important. And this is basically the story of the Unabomber. In 1978, Ted Kaczynski sent a homemade bomb to Northwestern University. The campus security officer who opened it, Terry Maker, sustained minor cuts and burns when the bomb exploded. This was the start of Kaczynski's 17-year spree of attacks using homemade bombs. Targets included American Airlines Flight 444 in 1979, the president of United Airlines Percy Wood in 1980, the University of Utah in 1981, Janet Smith, a secretary at Vanderbilt University in 1982, and many more. Kaczynski's first known murder victim was computer store owner Hugh Scruton, who was killed outside his shop in 1985. Kaczynski's final two murder victims were advertising executive Thomas J. Mosser in New Jersey in 1994 and timber industry lobbyist Gilbert Brett Murray in California in 1995. In total, the FBI tracked 16 bombs created by Kaczynski that resulted in 23 injured victims and 3 deaths. Only 2 bombs were identified and defused prior to the explosion. Near the start of Kaczynski's reign of bombing attacks in 1979, an FBI task force was started known by the acronym UNABOMB, which stood for University Airline Bombings. In due time, the UNSUB became known as the Unabomber. Over the next 2 decades, the task force grew to more than 150 full-time members. They painstakingly investigated the lives of victims and recovered bomb components, but Kaczynski was smart. He was careful to leave no forensic evidence. He used only easily found materials to make his bombs, and the victims were chosen at random. It wasn't until 1995 when Kaczynski's 35,000-word essay titled Industrial Society and Its Future made its way into the media that the FBI had their break. On September 19, 1995, the manifesto was published in the Washington Post and New York Times, and among thousands of responses the tips received daily for months, the FBI queued into David Kaczynski's, which described his troubled brother, Ted. Using letters and documents written by Ted, provided to the FBI by David, the FBI linguistic analysis determined the manifesto's author was, in fact, Kaczynski. Okay, this man... Can we first talk about the fact that everything he used for the bombs was found? He didn't buy anything.
Yeah. Okay. So there was no, the store records showed him, the camera showed him.
No paper trail, no money trail. That is brilliant.
Right.
It's you just fight because what to maximize damage in a bombing, they always put like screws or like pieces of wood because then it, when it explodes, it can hit someone.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can find that just lying around. If you go dumpster diving, I'm sure you could find quite a bit of stuff that could cause damage. But I mean, that is brilliant. And the fact it went on for 17 years, you can't just be stupid to get away from the FBI. Okay, maybe.
No, this man was
the
one.
FBI
No, wait. You can get away from the FBI, though.
Yeah, they just have to lose the evidence, you know.
Yeah, and then...
But, I mean, I feel like this is... I think this is the type of guy where you had the high IQ mixed with that psycho thing that just is not a good combination. We've seen before. So, if you look at the timeline, he started on the 25th of May, 1978, and ended on the 24th of April, 1995. Again, 17 years. There were 16 bombs in total. 2 were defused and 3 deaths. Now, for me, I actually think 3 deaths is very minimal. I was expecting a lot more deaths. Like, I'd heard of the Unabomber before. I think I watched a documentary when I was younger. But, I mean, the fact that I knew his name, I'm thinking there's probably, like, I mean, I'm grateful there's only 3 deaths. I don't want more people dead. But, like, for someone so high profile, the fact that there was only 3 casualties is pretty, I mean, pretty good. I don't know.
Do we call him a serial killer? Do you think he was... Yeah, no, he was trying to kill the people. He said he was trying to kill the people.
Actually, is there a serial bomber? I don't know. That's an interesting question. But you know what also made him pretty scary was that he didn't stick to one state. Like, his bombs were in Illinois, Utah, Tennessee, California, Washington, Michigan, Connecticut, and New Jersey. Now, it's not like, for example, me going out being like, oh, I hate the color of grass in Joburg and only bombing Joburg. He's bombing different states. So you could literally, one day he could have woken up and been like, oh, I want to bomb Vegas and send a bomb to Vegas. Like, that's really scary because how do you track that? How do you keep an eye out for that? Because that's
big. Yeah, it is. They said that he'd go to a library and he'd literally research, and on his research he would find a victim and then he would bomb that victim.
Victims out the library. So, I mean,
firstly, whose library are you in that you're just picking victims in? I mean, if it was my library, I'd be like, man, this guy was here for 17 years and I didn't know what he was doing. But secondly, that's random. So how do you find
him? No, exactly. It's not like he's going after people with just blonde hair or females. I mean, because then you could put out like a warning on the news being like, all females with blonde hair, please don't open any packages that get delivered to your house. But this is everyone. He just picked... Yeah. I mean, there were men, women, old, young, people who work at universities, people who work at the airport. I mean, how do you... That's what I think was so scary. I mean, because you don't know when he strikes next, and you don't know where it's going to be. You don't know who it's got. I'd freak. I would have been gone to Mexico. 100%.
I think the reason why he also, lasted long was because he wasn't stupid. He wasn't okay, this year I'm going to send out 12 bombs. 16 bombs in 17 years is very random. And
it's like one a year.
How do you know when it's coming, where it's coming, if it's over 17 years? And I'm sure they only picked up the pattern after the third or the fourth one. They were like, wait, this is weird. Because the first two could have been said to be random, to be quite honest.
Well, I mean, if we look, so obviously we said he's got his Unabomber manifesto. Now, for me, the fact that there's a manifesto, now, I mean, they're big people, smart people, like Karl Marx. Those are the type of people who are writing manifestos.
Manifestos,
they're not an average Joe. An average Joe. So that already shows you his high IQ. Some people do kind of dispute it as a work of a crazy man, but...
Yeah.
I mean...
So I don't think
so. It was called... No, yeah, I think he knew what he was doing. It was called Industrial Society and Its Future, and it was 35,000-word essay. Guys, I struggle to get 4,000 words for my assignments.
when they say 4 or 5,000 words, you're like, no. This guy's writing at 35. Oh, my word.
And basically, this is what the manifesto says. The manifesto contends that the Industrial Revolution began the harmful process of technology destroying nature while forcing humans to adapt to machines and creating a socio-political order that suppresses human freedom and potential. Now, the Industrial Revolution, the first one, happened in the 1700s in Europe. And basically, that's when people went from farming to, like, more working in factories, living in the city.
Yeah.
Now, I understand. There is always consequences to these type of things. Like, for example, at that time, there was heavy pollution because now everyone was working in factories. Everyone was crowded together. I understand there are consequences. But if you think I would rather go back and live on a farm, no, thank you.
I'm really fine. I mean, the other day I was just thinking to myself, because the other day we were battling with internet. And I said to someone, how on earth did we live before Wi-Fi? I mean, what were we doing? Because it's so crazy. Exactly. I wouldn't want to go back to that life. No, thank you.
No, first of all, I'm scared of chickens and I'm allergic to horses. So living on a farm,
scared of chickens.
Like look at this.
Chickens scare me like the queen.
No, same. I don't like chickens. I'll eat the chicken, but I don't want to touch it.
Yeah.
So basically, there's a quote from the manifesto that says, we give up a piece of ourselves whenever we adjust to conform to society standards. That we're too plugged in. We're letting technology take over our lives willingly. Now, I mean, okay, y'all. I mean, you can say that, but I still wouldn't choose to go back. Like,
I think he was a very sad, rejected man. And he was seeing more and more how he I think he felt like he was losing everything. And he looked at society and he's like, the more and more we go into this place, the more and more people reject each other, the more and more there's the loss of connection.
Well, if you look at it, I mean, I kind of disagree. I think with, like, as we've gone, we've got more connection with people. I mean, I was watching a video yesterday with a whole bunch of people at a concert, and I was like, these people were from around the world. A couple of hundred years ago, that wouldn't have been possible. I mean, first of all, with, like, segregation and, like, the whole feminist stuff. Like, people like that wouldn't have actually been able to collectively get together, but that's possible nowadays. Like, yes, there's downfalls, like dehomogenization of culture. We're losing culture, and, I mean, we all wear the same clothes, we watch the same. I get that, but I still wouldn't go back. I mean...
I wouldn't either. I mean, we've seen at restaurants where you go out with each other and they're both on their phones. It's like, why are you guys out here together?
Yeah, that's a
downfall. Or people that stay in the same house.
But think of... Imagine not being able to have a fridge. I mean, they used to have to keep everything in a box with salt. And No, I'm fine. Maybe it's the generation I grew up in, but I'm not about to go back to 1920s. Okay. Oh, wait, I do want to go to the 1920s.
No, 1920s.
1800s.
Yes.
1800s. So the investigation, like we said, was led by an FBI task force called Unabomb, which I thought was quite clever. It's University, UN, airline is the A, and then bomb is bombing.
Yeah.
I read, because when I originally heard the name Unabomber, I'm like, what is that?
Sounds cool, though.
But then I found out it actually stands for something. I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, that's cool. And we said, it had 150. I mean, imagine having 150 people working your case and they cannot find you.
Yeah.
I mean,
one person.
Like.
But this is why we say, why do you have so many detectives, FBI, if you can't, like, one person? One.
Yep. And basically, they would collect, obviously, evidence and stuff like that, but they like, it was all random stuff. Like, he just used random stuff. The victims were not known. They didn't have anything, like, in common. However, I was quite impressed because they profiled him to have lived in Chicago and later San Francisco, which was true when they did catch him. So, I mean, whoever profiled him, that's pretty.
They
that's
did well.
Quite decent. And they did profile a man, but they did investigate female suspects. And he actually, when he posted his manifesto, they weren't sure if they should publish it, because I mean, it was like a terrorist document. It's like, today in Germany, if someone had to write Mein Kampf now in Germany, they wouldn't publish it because of, well, it's anti-Semitic and it's about killing. We don't. But they were like, they took the chance by publishing it in hopes that someone would recognize the writing.
Yeah.
And someone did. Ted's brother, David Kaczynski, actually was like, this is my brother's writing. And he actually brought forward documents and other journal writings from his brother. And they were able then to analyze it and be like, this is the same person. And that's how they actually caught him.
So I think his fault for
publishing his manifesto, honestly.
Yeah, I think the saddest part of them catching him was the fact that when he realized that it was his brother that handed him in, he was like, no, David wouldn't do that. He loves me. And it was always around, like, in his mind, it was always around this whole thing of rejection, I guess.
Do you know his brother brought forward 40,000 handwritten journal pages? Do you know how much time you must have to write 40,000 pages?
This guy writes a lot. I mean, if I had a brother that's always writing me such long things,
I'd be like, what are you doing? What's happening? Nah, fam. And he obviously was caught, and he is now in a supermax prison in Colorado. I thought he was dead. Man's still alive.
Yeah, he is.
I said that, I was like, you're
I think he should
alive.
Be released, to be quite honest.
What?
Yeah, I had to think about that first because I was like, what if he starts bombing again? But I don't know.
No, but I mean, he's in prison. He got sentenced 8 consecutive life sentences without the possibility of a role. I worked that out. That's like 120 years. My man isn't coming out alive.
Yeah, but he's such a huge part of American history. I know it's like the bad.
And I'm
part,
sorry, his
but
phone
like
is
to
really
allow
creepy.
Him to die in jail, that's sad.
Yeah, but next thing you let him out as a 99-year-old and then he bombs again. What are you going to do then?
Listen, he's 99, he's about to die. Oh, no, I'm joking. No.
Wow, okay. No leave.
No, actually, what I would say, actually, looking at this, I would say that at least let him write. At least do interviews. Give us something. He
yeah,
can't just
I mean,
die and we
don't
get anything from him.
We don't actually have interviews with him. There's, like, hardly any, like, interview or, like, questioning.
Yeah.
Like, you can't find that on the internet.
Yeah.
And but I wanted to, because he's in a supermax in Colorado, and I was like, he bombed lots of states. So then I'd ask the question, if you committed crime in a lot of states, how do they choose which states you get tried in?
Yeah.
Like, and go to jail. And I actually did research. What they do is they find the place where, first of all, where you commit the most crimes, but also, for example, let's say I kill people in Texas and what another place, and they'll be like, we want to get her on a lethal injection. Then they'll be like, okay, we'll try her in Texas because Texas lethal injections are legal. So they like kind of see which place will give the worst sentence for the crime, and then that's where they try the victims, which I mean is quite clever.
Yeah.
I mean he was in a lot of states. And I suppose then they just send you to if Alcatraz was still open, this man's would have been sent there. I'm guarantee you that.
That would have been cool.
Right? Right? So he attended Harvard University and received a PhD in mathematics. You can't be stupid to get a PhD
no.
in mathematics.
This man was smart.
Man's a smart. Okay. He worked as an assistant in mathematics at the University of California at Berkeley, but abruptly quit in 1969. After that, he went off-grid and he moved into his little cabin. Guys, if you see his cabin, it looks like horror movie stuff. I'm not even
lying.
It does. Like moldy wood, dingy. It had no electricity, no running water, no heating, nothing. He went completely, which is also smart because you got no electricity bill, no water bill.
Yeah.
He probably grew his own food. He was completely off the grid. It's probably why they didn't find him for 17 years. It probably added to that. And his lawyer wanted him to take an insanity plea, but he said no. Later, he tried to kill himself and then asked for a retrial, but he wanted to defend himself.
Yeah.
So the judge said he'll only let him defend himself after a psychiatric evaluation, which came up with that he has paranoid schizophrenia.
Yeah.
Now, if you've watched the movie A Beautiful Mind, you'll actually get a very good representation of what that is. Like, you see things, you hear things.
Yeah.
So my guess is, in 1969, because it doesn't show up in little kids. I think he had a schizophrenic break in 1969. And it was triggered by technology.
Yeah.
So what happened is he moved off the grid, because he only started bombing like 9 years later. I think he then moved off the grid, did all his research, his manifesto, all that jazz, built bombs, tested bombs, whatever, whatever. But he was suffering from schizophrenia, and I'm pretty sure that the schizophrenia, whatever he was imagining, had to do with technology.
When he was in university, there was a professor that wanted to do a study with a couple of students. So he asked the students to basically sign in, but he didn't tell them what the study was. He was just like, it's a study, it's about this and whatever. And he signed on as one of the students. But what they actually did to the students is it actually messed them up so much, because they asked them to write down like an essay of some sort about their dreams and goals and stuff. And then they got into an interview room, and for days on end, they were like ridiculing them, breaking them down. And he was basically trying to see the effects of interrogation on the students. Yeah, and they ridiculed them, they demeaned everything, they broke them down to a level where they thought, I mean nothing matters, nothing, like, I'm stupid, they broke them down to that level, because he wanted to see the effects of harsh interrogation on people, and that's, I think, what started all of this.
No, I wouldn't be surprised, damn.
Yeah.
That is hectic, I mean, imagine.
Yeah. And it was 4 years, so...
No, well, then I can imagine why he went through the psychotic break. Like, I'm not surprised. Yeah. But he then got, they didn't give him the death penalty because they said he was mentally ill. And he accepted life imprisonment. He pleaded to that. Yeah. And he pleaded guilty. He then, later on, was like, no, I was forced to plead guilty. And they were like, what? No. And then basically, now he's just in prison. But like...
Yeah.
I kind of, you know what, after, because I, watching that movie, it's a good movie, it really is.
Yeah.
I forgot the guy, it's based on a true story, I forgot who it's about, but it really shows you, because the guy, his schizophrenia was that he was being hired by a secret, I think the CIA, to track Russians, because it was during the Cold War, and... It was really scary, because, I mean, he actually saw people. He saw people. He imagined being stabbed. And at the end, because obviously he's now on meds and stuff like that, he actually had to ask his wife every now and again, is this real or is it not? Imagine that's living crazy, not knowing what is real and what is fake. I mean, I can imagine that must be absolutely awful. But then again, he did go and bomb people.
Yeah.
So, like... I kind of have sympathy because he was sick, and I do, like, recognize that. But, I mean, there's lots of people with schizophrenia who don't go and bomb and kill people. But, I mean...
Well, I guess he thought that he was bringing good and justice to the world, so...
That is true, but, I mean, like... I don't know, just the way he speaks about, like, the industry and, like, technology, I kind of feel like he was doing it to prove a point more than... bring good, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But my thing was, he's trying to talk down technology. No.
Yeah.
That's not the way to say that.
To take down technology.
Bring down technology.
Yeah.
By building bombs, which is technology. So
I don't think his plan ever would have worked, because he wanted to kill anyone involved in the advancement of technology. And to be quite honest, how many people would he have had to kill in order to... I don't think it would have worked.
Exactly. Do you just go for, like, the big names? Like, nowadays, Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates. Yeah. Do you go after those people? Or do you... I mean, do you go after the people who just work at the Apple store and fix your phone?
You know what I mean.
Because they work with technology.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me... It was an interesting thing, because I really do think he was very smart. I really think he's got a high IQ, and he's exceptionally clever.
Yeah.
And, like, I really do think it was, I mean, it's quite impressive that he got away for 17 years. They never got, like, fingerprints. There's nothing. They never found any fingerprints, nothing. I actually think it's probably a lucky break that the brother recognized the writing. I feel like if that hadn't happened, my man would probably still be at large.
It would have been, probably more people would have died, more bombs would have gone out, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? So, I mean, it's impressive the way he operated. And I mean, yeah. When I found out that he didn't buy material, I was like, that is genius. That yeah. is absolutely genius, because often people get caught when they find like a paper trail. But yeah. if you're living off the grid and you're just picking up like sticks and stones to make a bomb, like, I'm not endorsing bombing. Please don't go bomb something, okay? No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, I think it is very, I mean, like I said, he's got a PhD in mathematics. He's not stupid. Yeah. And I mean, when they found his cabin, they actually found a bomb that was ready to be mailed.
Yeah,
so, I mean, they did stop a bombing, because, I mean, yeah. that one, who knows how many of that would have killed.
Yeah.
And, like, apparently they found so much many writings and journals. Yeah. And I'm telling you, he went off the grid. In 1969, he was very expressive. He moved to that cabin and yeah. planned bombings.
Yeah.
That's what he did. But, I mean, also, because he only bombed 9 years later. 9 years is a long time to make sure your plan's going to go your way.
Yeah.
And he didn't just... Oh, I'm going to start bombing people and next Tuesday. But he was
I think he also had OCD tendencies, because yeah. I think he wanted to plan everything to a T. He didn't want any mistakes. He didn't want any, yeah.
But you see, that's why I would love like to read like the psychiatric report, or yeah. like read an interview with him, because I think that'd be pretty interesting to see yeah. what he actually, like, what's going on up in this brain.
Yeah.
Clearly.
And interviews people. Someone interview this man.
Like, my thing is, the people, they either kill them or they don't interview them and they leave us hanging either way. Like, what? Yeah, but it was an interesting case. And I also yeah. thought, I mean, not many criminals post a manifesto. That's yeah. another thing.
Yeah.
You didn't get Jack the Ripper's manifesto or... Yeah. I don't know, who else have we done? The Black Dahlia Killer's manifest. Yeah. You don't get that. I mean, so no. the fact that he actually published something, I mean, that's again, it's impressive. And it was
he was a man of
different
vision.
Case. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we'll leave you at that. Don't bomb anybody, okay?
Please don't become Unabomber.
We don't want you to.
Like, don't.
Yeah, we don't want to feature you on the show, okay?
No, not
we
want to
come
way,
back
no.
next week. Do you want to come back next week and be like, oh, this person bombed because of us? No, thank you. I don't want to be inspiration for crime. Okay. No, thank you. But, I suppose from now until next week,
no mourners,
no funerals.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.
Like what you're listening to?
Follow us on Gab and Twitter at ActiveFM,
Instagram at ActiveFM777, and Facebook at /ActiveFM.